Hello, Steve. Hello, Jill. It's time to game classy.
Steve has joined the chat.
I have entered the game.
Steve has entered the game.
Triple kill.
God damn it.
Steve has left the game.
I don't even know what those are in reference to anymore.
Ah, come on. You didn't play Quake 2 back in the day?
I did not play Quake 2.
Wow. All right. Fair enough. You were not an FPS boy?
No, you know me. I missed there was that period when like Quake was coming out that I had just started college. And so I was not even thinking about video games at that point.
All right, fair enough.
There was a lot. I mean, like, I can remember the definite LAN parties and stuff like that at college, but I definitely do not remember playing too much Quake at that time.
Gotcha. Yeah, I got pretty good at Quake too. I don't think I ever had the accuracy or like the twitch skills to like really be like amazing. But what I did have is I had a pretty good memory and an ability to read people's habits. So I got pretty good at just like knowing where all the good stuff in the maps were. Cause that was like, that was one of the big skills back in the day is like, you know, do you know where the rocket launcher spawns on this map? And like, that's something that's just gone now. Now everything is, you know, battle royales or so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say it's random.
Yeah. It's a lot more random now. For me, the big LAN parties were always StarCraft.
Yeah. There was a lot of StarCraft people back in the day. I remember in college playing a little bit of, it was just Warcraft 3, I want to say. I don't remember quite.
Warcraft 3 was huge too, with the Defense of the Ancients. That was, you know, where the entire MOBA genre spawned from.
Yeah. I think
everyone was playing lots of Defense of the Ancients.
I don't remember. My problem is I don't want to say it because I might get the dates wrong, but it was around like 01, 02, I remember playing a lot of that. Because that was...
Sounds right. It's definitely early 2000s.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. And I also played a lot of Age of Empires was the one. It was Age of Empires 2 at the time, I want to say.
The fucking priests.
I know. Well, that's one of those few memes, like gaming memes that I truly understand is when you get like the blue wizard going up to something like that's red and just going war-lo-lo-lo-lo and then it just turns blue. Like, I get that.
Yes. And I did look it up. Warcraft 3 came out in 02.
Okay, so it was probably...
Defense of the Ancients came out in 03.
I want to say Warcraft 3, and I remember my friend getting it and being super excited about it, and I was like, what is this game? And he's like, oh, it's this. I'm like, is this anything like Warhammer? And he's like, I don't know what that is. And I'm like, fair enough. Because I remember playing Warhammer before that. I was like, oh, this is like a Warhammer video game. And I want to say I actually did have the Warhammer video game, the rat one. Why can't I remember the name of it now? I don't know.
I remember. Isn't it Curse of the or Shadow of the Horned Rat?
Shadow of the Horned Rat. You are correct, sir. Shadow of the Horned Rat, which was a good game. I liked that one.
That was a fantastic game.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, it used the exact Warhammer rules minus the fact that it was real time. If I remember correctly, that's what it was like. It was real time, so it was a little weird, but it used all of the Warhammer rules. So like the rolls and strength and toughness and like units breaking and stuff, if I remember correctly. It's been a while. I actually had that on PlayStation.
You could probably play it on your phone right now. You could probably play it on a birth, a pregnancy test right now.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. I'm saying I actually had it on the original PlayStation. I had that title. That was back when SSI was still making games. Strategic Simulation Industries or some shit.
I want to say I had it on my actual computer. I remember having the disc for it. I probably actually still have the disc for it somewhere in my house.
I'm sure it was way better on the computer, but, you know, I just, if it was on PlayStation, like, it's so funny because, like, PlayStation had such a ridiculous library of games. Outside of the ones where you talk to people, like, you know, the, like, obviously played or had things like Tomb Raider, Resident Evil, Castlevania. Like, once you get, like, the everyone has played these original PlayStation games out of the way, the actual, like, collections of what your games are, like, your personal choice games, are so weird. Like, yeah. They're all over the, because that's what, like, whenever I talk to people, like, outside of those, like, everyone has played these games. Whenever I'm talking to people about the games I own on PlayStation, they're just like, I didn't even know that game came out on PlayStation. Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, you know, my own personal feeling is the greatest PlayStation game of all time was Gex. So,
let's, Gex is a good game. I would not argue against Gex being a good game.
I just remember when I worked at Walgreens at the time, we would have like cheap PlayStation games, and Gex was always in that bin. It was Gex and like Army Men.
Yes, yes, yes. There were a lot of Gex games. He was really popular for a short while there.
Yeah, they'll bring him back. They'll put him in Smash. That's what'll happen.
They'll put him in Smash. I don't think the company that made Gex exists anymore. I think it was Crystal Dynamics. They don't exist anymore.
All right, so welcome to Game Classy. I think I forgot to introduce ourselves on like the last six podcasts.
Welcome to Ratcast, the one exclusive Warhammer Shadow of the Horned Rat podcast.
I'd listen. I know there are people who would listen more than they would listen to the podcast as it is now, because it's specialized. Like, it's like Shadow of the Horned Rat. I understand that. I'll listen to 31-hour podcasts about Shadow of the Horned Rat. And they're like, generalized gaming? No way. I don't know what I'll get.
Yes.
They could talk about penises.
my favorite Warhammer computer game from back in that era was definitely Dark Omen.
Omen was good. I never got a chance to play Dark Omen because I don't think my computers had specs enough to run it.
Dark Omen definitely required some chutzpah, but that game was really good. That was back when Electronic Arts made games.
Okay, so what? Refresh my memory. I want to say it was called Chaos in the Old World, but wasn't there like they tried to do an RTS Warhammer before they did Total War? I remember. I think I have the art book for it somewhere.
No, you are 100% correct. Namco made it. It was called Hang on. What was the game? It was made by Namco. It was Warhammer. Total Chaos? Warhammer?
Total Chaos? Yeah, I think it might have been Total Chaos.
Mark of Chaos.
Mark of Chaos.
Mark
okay.
of Chaos.
Yes, I knew Chaos was in there somewhere. So.
Yes, Mark of Chaos. That was the not successful RTS game.
Yeah, it was weird. I know they ported it to the PlayStation. Not the PlayStation, the Xbox. They had an Xbox port of it.
Yes, they did.
And
Xbox 360.
Xbox 360, sorry.
Yes.
You know, I never get those straight. But I remember they also, for the computer, like, it was like a high spec game. Like, you could not run it on a standard computer. You had to have some decent graphics for it.
Yeah, it was very, very, very high spec when it came out, PC wise. The PC specs were insane. I remember I had that on. I bought that on discs. It came on like 12 CDs.
Yeah, it came on a fuck ton of discs.
Yeah, it was absolutely absurd. And then it was, you know what, I have to say, it was definitely, it looked great. It sounded great. Like, the videos were awesome. The visuals were great. Just the game just really.
Well, yeah. But I do know.
Not really that great.
You want to know what a game has surprisingly high following online still? Warhammer Online.
Oh, well, people loved that game.
Yeah, and they still have servers running up for it.
That makes sense. Yeah.
You could legit. Just download it for free and play on the servers.
Yeah, Warhammer Online had from what I understand, like, the if you actually got far enough into the game to like really get into the big PvP event, PvP content, because that was the thing that, and I think that was actually one of the things that killed it, is that game was so meant for PvP. Like,
yeah,
it was all about PvP. Like, that was where the best content was. So like, you need to cater to all types if you're going to have a successful MMO. You can't really have an end game that's focused on just one or the other. And I think the end game for Warhammer was 100% focused on PvP, and then servers weren't populated enough to make it work out. But from everything I've been told, because I played it at launch, and it was okay. Like, I didn't really like get gripped, and I was like, yeah, whatever. I'm not going to play this game anymore. It wasn't really that awesome. but apparently all of the people I talked to who did go deep and got into like the big like realm battles of like, you know, huge fights, apparently that's dope as fuck. Like, that's the big thing.
Well, I mean, you know, we got Warhammer Total War, which was the be all end all of Warhammer video games. I don't think anything for Warhammer Fantasy will ever compete with that in terms of
Warhammer Total War 3 will be the only.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. like it has Total War. That's it.
Yeah, there's really no way to make there's really no way to make a better Old World game.
Yeah,
that's a war game. That's a war game.
The only thing I was thinking that would be cool for a Warhammer game would be to do it like Dynasty Warrior. So you take the hero role and you just basically run your hero up through like thousands of bad guys.
There is a game series and it has a bit of a cult following, enough to at least get a sequel because that I didn't even know what happened. But there was a game that came out again early 2000s. So this was original Xbox. It was called Kingdom Under Fire, and this game is like what you just said. This would be the ultimate Warhammer game in that regard. So what Kingdom Under Fire is it's like Dynasty Warriors.
Yeah.
Where you play as a overpowered hero character, like a wizard or like a super badass paladin or something along those lines, and you fight. However, unlike Dynasty Warriors, what Kingdom Under Fire has is there's unit commands.
So
you can actually like order your cavalry to charge in certain spots. So you can be like, I want the cavalry to charge here. So there's actually like a huge RTS battle going on while you're playing Dynasty Warriors.
That's cool. I could see that. I just like the idea of like, let's say you're playing like, let's call it Warhammer Dynasty, whatever, Warhammer Dynasty, and you get to pick like, okay, I'm going to play as the High Elves, and you get a choice between like Tyrion, Teclis, and Eltharion. And then as you're like, the High Elf host is hitting the Dark Elf host, you're basically running one of those three characters around just kicking ass, basically.
Oh yeah, I'm telling you, dude, Kingdom Under Fire is basically that game. Like it's minus the Warhammer IP though, so like you don't have like the specifics there, but like it's really that game. It's very it would be perfect like to do an updated version of it and just like use the Warhammer IP stuff.
Yeah,
it would be actually flawless.
Yeah, that's the thing, is it's got to have the Warhammer IP, because I don't care about random dude. I want the memes. That's what I want. I want to be able to meme it.
Yes. Well, yeah, you need to be able to have a guy who's going to deliver you the iconic line of metal boxes.
Cetra does not kneel.
Yes. Yes.
Like, just, okay, Steve, let me put it in your words, in your terms. Fucking riding a chariot through bad guys, playing as the Tomb Kings, and your Cetra just fucking rocking them.
Yeah.
You would lose your shit.
You don't need to convince me of something that I'm already like fully in support of.
I know I haven't seen you in like 6 months, but I know that if that ever came out, you would never, ever leave your house ever again. We'd be doing this podcast and you'd be playing it as we are doing the podcast.
Yeah, I'd be like, what was that? What was
it? Cetra's not kneeling again.
you just hear like Cetra and like in the background. And you're like, are you playing again? I'd be like, no.
No.
Oh no, I'm not playing. I'm paying attention to the cast.
All right. Oh well. So I want to let's actually get started into the news, because there's actually a decent amount of news this week, or this 2 week period. Well, you want to talk about the biggest news first?
Sure. I mean, do you mean biggest as in literally like the big giants?
No. I am talking about the most important thing that's being released. A game like this has not been released in years. I'm talking about the Kings of War boat game.
Oh, Mantic Armada.
The Mantic Armada game.
Toot, toot.
Toot, toot. I'm moving the boats. No, it's let's actually talk about it first, because I know you think it looks super dope.
Yeah, I think it looks cool. I mean, I'm a fucking mark for boat games.
Like, I know, like
I'm the worst person to like ask, like be like, oh, do you think this game looks cool? I'm like, does it have boats? And you're like, yes. I'm like, it's good.
I think I'm with you on that, just because there's never been a good boat game, like a solid one that's been like fun to play over.
Yeah, because the one company that folded, that
Spartan.
Made Spartan.
Like, they did Uncharted Seas, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing, like fantastic models. Great, like great look. The game looked phenomenal. Absolute ass rules. Just fucking garbage. Like terrible to play.
Yeah, the Kings of War, of course, the Mantic, is putting out a boat game. It's using the Black Sea rules from Warlord, so it's a reskin of Black Seas, which from what I've heard is not a terrible game. I've heard though that it's very, very historical, if that makes sense. Like it's not like very run and gun beer and pretzels. Well, it is beer and pretzels, but it's not like American beer and pretzels where we're like roll dice and, you know, explosions and fast and cool. It's very British where we're like, okay, well, we're going to do this turn. We're going to take our ruler and we're going to move our ships in this direction. Which direction is the wind playing, Nigel? Which direction is the wind flowing? Oi, it's going south by southwest this turn. You know, that's like, it's like, I've heard it's like that. Not necessarily like that. I haven't played it myself, so I can't comment too much.
Well, Black Seas is an 8.2 on Board Game Geek, which is very high for Board Game Geek. So, probably not bad. And I imagine if they do the usual addition of, Mantic simplification and then also add their, you know, magic and stuff, it should end up being pretty good.
I mean, I'm sure it will be. The boats look really solid. I mean, it looks like a really good fantasy boat game. I like that they did resin sails, or, you know,
are you 100% sure that it's using the Black Seas rules?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
100% sure.
It's right, the only reason I ask is because Black Seas has like unit cards, like for the specific ships. And I haven't seen any of that in any of the Mantic.
No, they actually, if you actually look at like the Mantic Kings of War Armada page, like the announcement, they show the cards.
Oh, okay. It's the announcing the game page.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see. Okay. I see here. It wasn't in the product pages I was looking at. It's in the like other announcement one. Okay, cool.
Yeah. It's currently for pre-sale right now, Steve. So you could get your copy. Yeah, I like that it comes with the mat, though. I think that most boat games should come with a map.
Oh, yeah, the mat. Also, the mat looks great. And, I mean, I love fucking boats. I love boats. The game looks fucking awesome. Boat games rule. Like I said, it's fucking boats, man.
The best part about this for our listeners is Steve will be like, okay, I'll buy into it just to do my undead boat army. I'm going to get my three undead boats to play. He's going to play it once and go, game's trash, and throw it away.
I actually really like the orc boats.
The orc boats do look really sweet.
And to be fair, the only boat game that ever actually happened was I played the Spartan ones a few times, and I was just like, it took a while, and I was just like, oh, this game's actually really bad. Yeah. The only game that was actually a one and done was the fucking shitty Warhammer one.
God, why can't I think of it right now? The game where everybody was like, is this Manowar? Why isn't this Manowar?
Yeah, everyone's like, it's Manowar. It looks like Manowar. Oh, dreadfully.
Yes.
Yes. That game was fucking garbage. Actually trash. Amazing models. The models were fucking dope. I loved the sponsors and all that stuff.
That was back when Games Workshop was doing those solid self-contained box games. I mean, they still do them on occasion. But man, they had like a run of like perfect box games.
And then Dreadfleet just ruined all of the goodwill. Yeah,
I mean, but the thing is that Dreadfleet, even though the rules were not quite there, still a gorgeous set. I have everything for Dreadfleet because it's a gorgeous box set.
Oh, the figures rule.
The figures rule. It came with that nice cloth map. They had really nice cards. It was just an all around beautiful set.
Yeah, the set was great. Just the game was fucking trash.
Yes, the game was, you know, I've heard good things. I don't remember if I've ever actually played it off the top of my head. I may have at some point.
I thought it was unreal terrible when I played. I was just like, this is
awesome.
But just awful.
But now you get to relive the high adventures on the high seas, Steve.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I don't know. Like I said, I'm not ready to jump into a fucking another miniatures game right now. But
I do feel like maybe the starter set with the Basilians and the Orcs may be a misstep on their part. I think.
I mean, humans versus Orcs is a pretty classic starter.
I think that's the reason.
It's the Warcraft starter.
I know, and I think that's the reason. I think it's a little too generic. In that, I think if they had started off with like two, like not proprietary, but something that's pretty uniquely Mantic, may have been a little cooler. Maybe it would have enticed me a little bit more. Well, but I'm just
the next launch is going to be the Undead versus Dwarves.
Exactly. So like if they had started off with Undead versus Dwarves, I would have been like, whoa, what's this? This is really interesting. But it's like, oh, humans versus Orcs. I haven't seen this 10,000 times.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think it's a fine idea to start.
Yeah,
with.
It's fine.
Because their second release should come pretty fast. That's usually like with Mantic when they do a launch, they usually have a pretty prompt secondary release. So if you don't happen to like the orcs, the Basilian style, you could just wait, and then you'll either be able to pick dwarves or undead, and then, you know, they'll slowly add to those. My only question is like, I guess I could actually look and see what Black Sails could probably answer that. My question is going to be, how big of a game you need to be? Because, like, it's, you know, the two-player starter set looks like you get four ships.
Yeah.
For each faction. So is that like a real game, or is that a bullshit game?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know, something that's never really been done is a more, like, smaller fleet engagement. Like, all these fleet games generally tend to get fairly big fairly quickly. It's the Trafalgar issue, because, you know, all the British guys want to play the Battle of Trafalgar, so they get these massive ships that all go in a line and then shoot at each other, because that's what ships of the line used to do.
Right.
So they're called ships of the line.
Right.
So when you're trying to do a more, like, skirmish battle with ships, it becomes a little bit more difficult. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I also think the scale is wrong to do the Battle of Trafalgar, because, like, you would basically need War Master scale ships to do that.
Yeah, which they make.
Like, super tiny ships. Well, I'm sorry, not, oh, I guess I said that wrong. You would not need ships that were scaled to make it seem like 15 mil figures would fit on, or 12 mil figures would fit on. You would need 12 mil ships, like very little ships.
Yeah, and I think it would be pretty cool to have, like, an actual, like, let's say they did a boat game where it was just like one, or let's say three ships were like, or five ships was like a massive fleet. So these are bigger ships that you could almost put War Master scale figures on. Like, to have a boat game that focused on that level, I think would be pretty cool. So it's like you buy three really detailed, gorgeous ships, and you fight that way.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be cool. That's just a quick question. Like, is that a real game? And if it's not a real game, what's the level of expansion I need to get it to a real game? I can't imagine it takes a ton of ships, simply because they don't have that many models.
So
there's not that much variety. So I can't imagine it. They're going to ask you to have like a 10 or 12 ship game when there's like three variants of ships.
Well, I'm looking at the Warlord home page for Black Seas and looking at the fleets that you can buy. And it looks like just about all of them are about 11 ships.
For a fleet.
Yeah.
Okay. So it'll probably require a, so I would guess you would want the starter, and then the booster fleet would probably be
mm-hmm.
get you there. Because the starter gets you four, and then the booster fleet gets you four. So you're probably going to want to end up around eight ships.
Yeah, exactly. And I really love this, because I'm looking at, like, the Royal Fleet and then the Spanish Fleet. And as I'm flipping between the pictures, I don't know if you can hear my clicking in the background. It's like, these look exactly the same.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the things that's going to be super nice about Armada is the ships. Like, even though all of the ships released so far are just, you know, mast sails.
Yeah.
They are very distinct looking. Like, the orc ships have, like, a really nice, like, intimidating cut look to them. Like, their one ship has teeth, which I think is really cool. Yeah. There's also a Kraken, which was really cool looking.
They got motherfucking sea monsters.
They fucking do. He's really cool. He's on the Armada main page. He's a fucking gigantic Kraken. He looks fucking dope. Also, that reminds me of something I forgot to mention last time we were talking about minis. The Mantic sculpting has gotten so much better so fast.
Yeah, a Mantic has some nice stuff. I'm not gonna. If you're wanting to do mass combat games, there's. And you don't already have a bunch of shit, like, you could, the Mantic stuff is perfectly fine for all of that.
Yeah, well, I noticed, because I was looking at some of their newer releases, and I was like, that's a Mantic figure? I was like, wow, it's really good. Like, they've definitely come a long way since their initial Elves release.
Yeah, I remember that was like, 08, 09, around that time?
Sounds about right.
Yeah, I remember, because I remember seeing them and at Gen Con, and they gave me like a sprue of their Elves, and I was like, these are trash.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind the spindly elf look. I think that's cool. That reminds me of, you know, old school role playing. But I feel that you can distinctly tell the difference between a very cool looking spindly, and like we'll just go straight up use their own models against them. There's spindly elf model, like the elf king with spear or the elf palace guard prince. You can look at that miniature and compare it to one of their plastic infantry models and be like, ah, I see. Okay, so this one is good. This is the like the spindly tall elf model that it looks cool. And then you'd be like, and this one is terrible, which is the spindly elf model infantry. Like you can really tell the difference. Although I will say, again, that is another thing where they can be saved by a good paint job.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's as I always say with paint jobs, it's like this one is one where it's like you have to be at least somewhat decent to really bring up the models. There are certain companies where the models are just so good that even a mediocre paint job, it looks fantastic, so you don't even have to worry about it.
Usually if they're high, usually that's I think the difference is generally like the quick and dirty on that is how much texture the model has.
Yeah.
Because if the model has a ton of texture and is a highly detailed model, it's actually easier to make it look better, because if you're just, you know, if you're kind of average, or if you just do really simple stuff like just a base coat and a wash and like that and call it a day, like you just do base coat and wash of different colors for each spot, it'll look really good because the detail is done for you. So like the details will pop and it'll look fine and it won't look bad. But when you have like, especially the older Mantic stuff, like not their newer stuff, like even their newer Goblin stuff looks really good. Like anything newer they've done has really alleviated this issue. But a lot of their older stuff was very flat, and not flat as in thin, but like the detail is flat.
There's not a lot of detail, yeah.
Yeah, so like flat plates for armor and stuff. So like that doesn't take to wash as well. That doesn't take to basic painting well to make it look really good. You have to like do highlights, lines, or blends. You have to do something to give it the depth of a sculpt. So that requires a lot of effort. If not necessarily talent, a lot of effort. And when you look at something like, you know, like a Lizardman army. Lizardman sculpts are pretty old, but the Lizardmen themselves are super textured, lots of scales, other things like that. So like a block of Saurus looks really good if you do a base, like if you spray a box of Saurus white and you wash the back with a dark color and you wash the front with a light color, and then you do like kind of an overwash thinly, they'll look good because there's so much texture for the washes to pick up.
Yeah. And then you got to mat it a lot.
Yes, yes.
So that no light escapes.
Yes, you must do that. No light can escape your miniature.
No light. Yeah, it doesn't even reflect the light. Like, yes. There's no shine to it whatsoever.
Yes, you should. You should set
the Joe set method them, of painting.
You should set your army on the table, and your opponent should not be able to see what is happening because they, like you, have been crushed into the singularity of the black hole. Yes. you have created due to how
it's
much.
So Matt, it's so wonderful. Yes. Speaking of, so you'll appreciate this a little bit. I'm working on my sixth edition Orc and Goblin army right now, and as I'm working on it, I have these old metal Orc boar boys. Which I was just going to say, like, I absolutely love the fact that even though they are really old, but they do have that really nice detail. So it's like got flat places for the skin, but it's got like really nice detailed armor and stuff like that. So you get a really nice combination of that. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to tell you that, like, because I'm kind of the whole method behind the army is that how would I paint this? How would I base it, put it together? If I did this in 2003 with current knowledge of techniques and everything else, and I was still like, I'm going to take a tube of toothpaste, cut it, an old tube of toothpaste, wash it, cut it, and use it for my flag.
Yes.
that's old school. But yes, I did. But I wanted to mention that because I have inked these models and I have matted them to the point where I don't believe the sun exists anymore.
Yes, I like it. Yeah, there's no such thing as light.
Yes. All right, so let's move on. Let's talk about something that's going to get your blood riled up. So I think the biggest news, actually, of the last 2 weeks was the pre-order re-release of HeroQuest, the
game system. Yes,
So
Broadsword.
So let's. So your and I initial reactions were about the same in that it's really cool. You are not a fan of the system in which they're releasing it.
Yes, I think that the way they're releasing it, like cutting out stores, is pretty horseshit. Because like a lot of stores have waited for, you know, something like stores wait for that kind of stuff. Like when there's like a huge release that's going to be big, especially a board game release, something that's self-contained. That's like a huge like a windfall for stores. Like when GW would release Space Hulk. And like and hobby and independent stores would get Space Hulk. That was huge money for any independent store. Like,
yeah,
that's a huge, like, it's like getting notified that you're gonna make a bunch of money. So that's really what it is. Like, it's a windfall. So right now in this situation where, like, you know, a lot of stores are struggling, there's a lot of, you know, things that are up in the air. Something that's a guaranteed sale for an item, if you bought that and put it in your game store, someone's gonna buy it, like, mm-hmm. period. Like, if you only had one, you will sell the one, but like, that's something that's a guaranteed sale, like, people will buy that. So to see a Kickstarter-esque release thing from the biggest toy and games manufacturer on the fucking planet is pretty disgusting for a lot of reasons. Like, one, they have more than enough money to produce it and send it out as a regular release. Like, there's no fucking question about that. Like, obviously, they're fucking Hasbro. They're billions of dollars of company. Like, they have more money than God, essentially. Like, so to see them try and do basically, like, all this really is, this is a slap in the face to distributors. This is a slap in the face to retailers in a time where, like, something like this would be extremely beneficial for retailers and distributors to have.
Well, and I'm wondering if there's something to it.
Oh, I know exactly what there is to it. It's, they're getting the money first. They're cutting out. They're going to make massive profit. That's
what. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's something else. I feel like there's something else going on. And just listen to me for just a second. So this is only for US and Canada right now.
Yes.
Like, there is no shipping, there's no buying in the UK, in Europe, which there's... Now, if I was Hasbro, I'd be like, of course I'm going to sell this in the UK and Europe, because that's where a huge chunk of the fan base for this game is. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if they are releasing it in this model because of something tied up with whatever licensing rights they had with Games Workshop at the time. I don't know. That could be one of them, and that could be part of the reason why they haven't re-released it in however many years. They just figured out, like, if we do it this way, there could be a loophole in whatever contract or whatever legal wrangling had been going on. You think that might be a possibility?
I do not believe that is the case in this one, because it's Avalon Hill. It's not Milton Bradley, which was the original distributor for HeroQuest. Now Milton Bradley is an X company. They were absorbed by Hasbro.
Yes.
So, like, they've become part of Hasbro. So, I mean, that's a thing. But however, even with the most finagling of legal wranglings, I don't think you could use a company that you absorbed years ago's years old contract that likely had an extremely specific release date, limited date, because HeroQuest went out of print and they never made more. So nope. Clearly they had a licensing agreement for a certain period of time. They made the maximum amount of games they would make for that period of time of licensing, and they called it a day. Yeah. So I think that's incredibly unlikely. I think I'm very much an Occam's razor guy, and I think the simplest solution is this. This is a massive amount of money that they can put directly into their pocket by cutting out retailers, because they're charging retail price. Because that's the thing. When a company makes a game along the traditional method, they sell the game to sometimes they sell direct to retailers, sometimes they sell through a distributor. Either way, if they're selling to a distributor or a retailer, they're losing margin. You know, so if the game is $100 MSRP, which is the manufacturer's suggested retail price, for anyone who doesn't know that. Let's say we'll go with a very generous margin, which would be to a distributor, and this is a very generous one. This would be a highly unusual margin. But just to give people an example, we'll say 60%. we'll say we're going to go a full 60% to the distributor, which means they're going to sell each copy of the game to the distributor for $40. And then the distributor can turn around and sell it at 50% margin to the store, which will be $50. This is like a, that's like a, I'd say that's an, maybe a 10 years ago, like pretty cut and dry margin deal, like for a manufacturer. That was,
yeah.
You know, it's pretty, not average, but let's just say like a generous one. So the distributor is going to sell it at, the distributor is going to pay $40 for it. And then they're going to sell it to a retailer for $50. So the distributor makes $10. Then the retailer sells it, probably is forced to sell it at a discount because of online sellers. So they're going to sell it at $90, but you know, they're going to make $40, or even if they cut low at 80, they'll make $30. This is just, you know, again, this is all theoretical example. So that means that the gross sales per unit for the manufacturer is $40. So this stuff is all dirt cheap. Like the actual components, manufacturing, all of these things, it's next to nothing. It costs almost nothing for any of this stuff. The stuff that's expensive for in gaming is the same as stuff that's expensive anywhere else. It's marketing, it's creatives. So you got to pay your artists, the guys who do your pictures, so on and so forth. Now, one thing about the artists is nice is that the people who do the work for your game are flat. So like whoever did that, that homage piece for the game screen, which I very much like that they did that. I really like the treatment of the components for this game. But whoever did that homage piece, he got paid, you know, it's Hasbro. So they probably paid pretty well. So he probably got paid his, like, you know, $6,000 to $8,000 to do his, you know, artwork for the cover and for the, piece, whatever, but that's done. That cost is done. So yeah. if we were to apply that per unit for game, it would be fractional. So let's just be. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I get, you don't have to break it all completely down, but I get it.
So let's say it costs $15 to produce this game. So they're making $25 for every copy they sell to a distributor.
Yeah.
Well, let's just sell it directly to the customers instead and make $85 per copy. And that's the most simple. That's the simplest explanation.
It could very well be. I'm wondering, because there's a lot of things to this, and it makes me wonder why. And I know the simplest solution is they're going to make the most amount of money on that. But I also think it is going to make some. It's going to make a lot of distributors, and it's going to make a lot of stores very, very, very upset. And like
the thing is, Hasbro is a company that's so big, it doesn't matter.
Like, yeah, I guess
they do not have to care. Like that. Like, what are you going to do? Not buy Hasbro? Good luck. Yeah. Good luck.
Well, and also they generally use the Pulse system, which is their Kickstarter system, right? They usually use that for more, you know, I would say fringe stuff, like stuff that people might not necessarily buy if it's in the store at a Target, but like absolutely, you know, the collectors are going to be like, oh, hell yeah, I really do want this G.I. Joe Classified Series Snake Supreme Cobra Commander figure.
Right, or like, I really want Optimus Prime battle damaged precisely from episode 4, season 2, like that kind of thing. Like, I want this very, very specific, like, thing. So like something where you're gonna tailor your production to the order, like
that
makes sense at least, but not something like HeroQuest, a game that's been in demand forever.
That's the part that I'm wondering about, because it's like HeroQuest is a game that has been, like, people have been asking about that for years. I mean, this is a game that has always consistently been worth more than it actually, and for, I shouldn't say always, but like, let's say the last 20 years has always been worth far more than the initial like release of
it. It's maintained an over $200 value.
Yes.
For incomplete copies of the game.
Yes.
Like,
that's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like for years, it's $200 minimum, if you're lucky, for an incomplete copy of the game.
Yeah.
So,
and there's a lot of components, so you're generally going to find an incomplete copy.
Oh yeah. You're going to be missing some doors, or like you're going to have the stands for the doors, but not the cards.
Yeah.
You're going to be missing some dice. For sure. Yeah. There's just so many components.
Yeah. And The one thing I'm also wondering about, and I know we talked about this a little bit, is why did they redo the sculpts? I do not understand. Like, I think, like, when I think HeroQuest, I have a very, very specific version of miniatures in my head, right? Mm-hmm. Now, now stay with me on this one, is that HeroQuest, that they're releasing this, is banking off a lot of people remembering the game from when they were, this is a very nostalgia buy for people.
Yes.
Like, it's for people who, A, had a copy that they probably lost or sold or whatever else. When they moved out, their parents sold it, and they want to recapture that. There's there's people who've never gotten a chance to play it and have always heard about HeroQuest and like have looked over the kind of nostalgia feel to, and the have looked at the components over a period of time. And then there are three, there's like the periphery who've A, never had it, B, never played it, but play games like Warhammer where you've been told, you know, HeroQuest is this great game, and you're like, oh, this is interesting. And here you go, you have all these figures that A, barely in any semblance look like the old figures, and B, they're just they look like standard generic like figures that you'd buy in like a big tub full of fantasy figures. Like, you'd get the tub of fantasy figures and you're like, here's my Minotaur, here is my skeleton. Like, there's nothing really fantastic or special about these figures, in my opinion. I do like the sculpted dungeon decor. I think it's cool. I think it's fairly well done. I don't really necessarily think it needed to.
I will say, to their credit, minus the dwarf, the hero characters are all in a contemporary version of their classic pose.
Yes.
The wizard, the original wizard is standing bow-legged in the classic.
yes.
Who is that? Who is that sculptor who did that pose all the time? The guy who did Ragnar Blackmane.
Ali Morrison.
Is it Ali Morrison?
I don't remember off the top of my head.
Classic Ali Morrison pose where you stand with your legs apart, like a little bit past your shoulders. Then you put your hands both like make fists and point your fists to the right and to the left exactly of your body. That's that pose. That's the pose that the old elf was in. And so like the new elf is kind of the same. You know, legs are kind of spread, sword in one hand, and then hand outstretched in the other, but not in like a doofy looking way. And then the wizard, they're all in the same pose. Except for the dwarf. The dwarf is in a very, the original HeroQuest dwarf was in a very intimidating pose, like almost in repose after a battle, or perhaps just before the fight. He was doing the, I'm standing straight, I have my axe hilt on the ground, and my hand is on top of the blade. Kind of like, you know, that look. So that's a pose that they distinctly changed for the new one. But the barbarians in the exact same pose. So like the poses are pretty good. I don't have a very big issue with the hero characters. I felt that they nailed
Jess Goodwin. Jess Goodwin was the original sculptor on it.
Jess Goodwin. Okay, yes. Yeah. So yeah, not so the Jess Goodwin pose. So I feel that they nailed the heroes personally. I like the gargoyle. I like that it's in the same pose as the gargoyle. I don't like that they removed the gargoyle's iconic hat. I mean, he had an iconic hat. Like, you cannot deny. That hat was absolutely like it was part of the profile. Like, I'll never forget that gargoyle's fucking pointy ass Kaiser hat. Like, like there's no way to forget that hat. Like, it's such a thing. But I mean, they did do the same pose for the gargoyle, although they did get rid of his whip.
That might have been a thing with A, that was really close to the original Bloodthirster model, which in itself was a ripoff of the Balrog. Yeah.
So they did that. There are the orcs are like really big and swole. I remember them being really spindly in HeroQuest.
They look kind of like how the goblins look, you know, with the big heads and kind of like thin arms. They look like frog people almost.
Yeah, they're like squat. They're real squat from there. So like these guys
squats?
Are kind of
you guys talking about squats?
Yeah, we're talking about squats. I don't really have the sculpts of the figures. I think that they are fine. I felt that they did very good with the heroes. I think that they nailed them pretty well. I would have liked to have seen a little less clothes in the barbarian. Personally, I also don't like the dwarves' like weird kind of like helmet thing. I think it's dumb.
It's very. I think a lot of the sculpting, and Dwayne said this best. It's very Warcraft. Like everything about this game is very Warcraft.
Yes, they have a very there's a lot of Warcraft aesthetic with the new designer, which I agree with that, especially with the orcs. The orcs are very Warcraft, but they do have orc ladies, which I really like.
Well, so. I think that's that would be one thing that would benefit that benefits from redoing the game is having more. Yeah, well, you could have more female figures. I mean, all of the main four have bonus female characters, which I think is dumb because that should just be flat in the game. You have eight models, you have male and female, because I think that would be fair. I mean, to have the females as a bonus, I think is stupid. Once again, it limits your you know, exposure.
You know, I guess I'm not. Oh, you mean the alternate? You mean the gender swapped heroes?
Yes, the gender swapped heroes are only.
Oh, okay, because I was super confused. I was like, what are you? I was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
They're called pulse bonus because they're a bonus sculpt for just the pulse campaign.
Yes, I see what you're talking about. Now. I thought you were talking about the because the elf is a lady in the base set, and it looks like there's a lady in each of the hero expansions.
So, yeah.
That's fine. I mean, that's just a way to make more money.
I hate the concept of it. Like, oh well, you do get a female in the main box set. It's an elf. Like, no shit. Like, come on, let's do something a little bit different here.
But there is. I would like to point out the speculated token edition would have been an elf lady with a bow.
Yes, that's true.
That was the if we're going to go with the tokenism elf female character. It would have been elf lady with almost no armor, like robes and a bow. But instead, she actually looks like a pretty badass warrior. She's got a fucking sweet sword. She's got some cool potions. She's wearing plate armor.
Does have boob armor though, which I think that we should get away from. But that's just me.
I like boob armor. I also like that the orc ladies have boob armor. boob armor just cracks me up. It does.
It's.
Boob armor is just funny because it's one of those things where it's like, I know why you did it. And like, it aesthetically like looks fine. It's just like, that's like the most lethal thing you could ever do in armor. that turns a piece of armor into an actually like additionally assisting your death tool.
Yeah.
Because the armor breaks and like concaves into your chest. Yeah. Just like, you know.
It cracks your sternum right in half.
Because if you ever look at any historical like women who wore armor in any capacity, they wore the same armor that men wore because armor is not gendered. It's to protect your fucking soft meats.
So what do they also do is if you pay $50 more, you're also going to get Keller's Keep and Return of the Witch Lord, which were two expansions for HeroQuest back in the day.
Yes.
I remember Witch Lord was really cool when you'd see that in the stores.
Yes, I think it was very cool. I remember seeing it and not seeing the base game.
Yeah, I can't remember if I saw like the Hero Quest version or the Warhammer Quest version. I don't remember. It's something like that in my head. Because I think the Warhammer Quest version, like the Witch Lord had like a big throne, if I remember correctly.
I thought the throne was on the Hero Quest one too.
I don't remember. I'm trying to remember things that happened 25 years ago. I could barely remember what happened last week. And then we have, you know, Keller's Keep and everything like that. I mean, it's all fine. I really, what stopped me from backing it was that I just don't like the aesthetic off the top of my head. I would love to play it. I think it'd be really fun to play with my kids, but I just don't like the aesthetic of the miniatures. I think that they're too busy. I think they would have been, and I think it would have been better to have the older school sculpts just in general. That's just me. I mean, I know a lot of people love it and a lot of people backed it. In fact,
It's already at $1.5 million.
Yeah, it's at $1.5 million after I think like 6 days, maybe not six, like 5 days. Not even. It's been 4 days. 4 days.
Yeah. So that's. I mean, if it, that means there's what, like 10,000 backers.
Yes.
So like, yeah. So again, that's people who could have been buying this from, you know, local stores.
And as I've said. It's not like Hasbro or whoever didn't know the demand was there. They knew the demand was there. That's why they put. And what's also funny is that a lot of their other Pulse things that they've put up have had. It's been based on units sold, not on cash. This is the first one that I've seen that where the Pulse is based on money sales, not necessarily on units.
Yeah,
which I think is. Definitely sketch as is.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And that's the thing too. Like, Hasbro is worth $10.5 billion. Like, they are not a little company that needs help.
Yeah, exactly.
Getting big. I think, like, to put it in comparison, I believe that Games Workshop is valued at $1 billion.
Oh yeah,
I think that's right. It's one from their boom. They ended up at $1 billion. If I'm not mistaken.
Man, I should have bought that stock when they tanked.
Right?
13, remember, 14?
We were both joking about it. We were both saying we should buy a bunch of workshop stock.
We should.
We fucking should have. We are idiots.
It's too bad, like, you were poor and I had just had a kid, so I was poor.
Yeah, yes. that's also accurate. We were dumb and didn't have the money.
No, we were dumb. We were like, yeah, we should do this. And neither of us had the money to do
it. I guess that's true. I can't say that we were dumb, because we would have likely done that if we had the money to spare.
Yeah.
But to give you an idea of the level of, like, what Hasbro is worth. I mean, that's 10 times what Games Workshop is worth. And Games Workshop is essentially worth a dragon's trove of treasure right now.
Dragon's trove?
A fucking $1 billion. So, like, they're not the kind of company that needs the assistance of a special, you know, launch thing like this. It just really fucking rubs me the wrong way. Like, it just
does it. It rubs you. It's just
like, not like, even if they wanted to cut distributors out, like, sure, fine, get it to stores. Like, you know, that's good money for the stores, and that's, you know, they're the people who are. That's the thing too. Like, all these moves of getting away from stores and so on and so forth. I mean, I guess it's a little bit, I don't want to say it's super reasonable, but I can at least understand it for a board game, because a board game, you don't, like, as the manufacturer of a board game, you probably don't actually care about the front-facing view of your game to, like, the public. Like, cause you know, like, when you think about a board game, like, if I'm making, you know, if I'm making Fartman the Battle Lord, the board game, so Fartman the Battle Lord board game is coming out. It's a self-contained thing. There's no organized play or, like, special tournaments or anything like that. I don't particularly care how the customers get it, because the intention of that product is it's going to be a thing that they buy, they take home, they play with themselves or their other, or, you know, or their close friends. Like, that's the end of the day. Like, I don't care about that. So, like, doing a move like that with a game that's supposed to be self-contained, sure. But for, like, you know, things like that, you're expecting organized play, because there's a lot of board games that have organized play support and things like that. But, like, if you're expecting organized play and you're trying to cut retailers out, like, the hell are you doing? Like, and obviously Hasbro doesn't matter, because you can't boycott Hasbro. You not buy anything tabletop gaming ever again, unless you literally made your store entirely miniatures. So, like, you can't really boycott Hasbro, so they have the power to do that. But, like, you know, I could easily see boycotting, like, a smaller company that tried to pull this shenanigans. Like, yeah. I don't know. I'm trying. I can't think of a great example right now, but we'll just. Because I'm trying to think of a small company that still exists that isn't under, like, a window. Like, everything's been bought. That's the thing. Like smaller companies barely exist now. And that's another thing that I think is a problem. And that's, this is like a taste of things to come, as it were, in my opinion, because you have giant companies like Asmodee. Like, Asmodee is huge. They're fucking gigantic. They own so many brands. You know, they own Fantasy Flight. They own, you know, they're worth $2 billion, I think. Asmodee is worth $2 billion. So if Asmodee decides, hey, you know what, we're gonna do, I don't know, let's just say Twilight Imperium, we'll just use that as a good example, we're gonna do Twilight Imperium 4th edition, which is a guaranteed sale, because every person who buys, because Twilight Imperium, for as much as we, like, joke about it, and, like, it's like the meme game where, like, it lasts super long, Twilight Imperium is a fucking amazingly selling game. It sells way more than it should for its price point. It sells way more than it should for its complexity. It sells way more than it should for any of the factors that you would have a negative for Twilight Imperium. It still just sells like crazy. It's super expensive. Like, it's super expensive. It's super hard. It's very complicated. But, man, it's a big game. It's very impressive looking too. But it fucking sells. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying it's not something where it's going to be, like, yo, you're going to sell one of these a day. But, like, you sell Twilight Imperium, you restock it right away because someone else is going to come in and buy it. So, all that said, there is nothing that would stop Asmodee from being like, you know what? We're gonna say fuck it. We're gonna put it on Kickstarter. We're gonna put Twilight Imperium 4th edition on Kickstarter. Stretch goals, all that shit. Whatever, you know what you want. As a retailer, you couldn't boycott Asmodee. You'd be cutting off your nose. Like, you can't, because as Asmodee owns Fantasy Flight. Like, yeah, you could try to boycott them, but oh, you're doing well with Star Wars Legion. What are you going to do? Not buy any more Star Wars Legion because they put Twilight Imperium on Kickstarter?
Yeah, that's, well, the nice thing is that, to quote Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace, there's always a bigger fish. So Asmodee would be like, well, we're going to negotiate with, Disney to extend our Legion contract. And Disney's like, who are you?
Yeah, no, I'm just, you know, but that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. I don't like the precedent that it sets.
No, something that should. And you're absolutely right that this will be one of those things where companies find their surefire moneymakers and they're going to do something like this so that they don't have to lose any money. And it's going to be the ones that are like, that might be I want to say a gamble, but, you know, a little bit riskier of an investment on the store, on the production end. We'll probably go to the stores, and if it's a hit, it's a hit. You know, they're like, oh, all the better for it. But there's no, like, they're not really losing too much on their end. They're at least making some of their money back.
Right, and then now, that's something, too. Like in the COVID era, their board games are tanking now. Like, board games in general are actually trending down. And the reason they're trending down is because people aren't going to stores to try new board games.
Yep. And also, people are staying home and playing board games and realizing they're terrible.
They're doing? They're not going out and buying four new board games that they won't play. They're actually playing the 1,000 board games that they have at home.
All right. So moving on. Because we're running out of time and there's a couple more things I wanted to talk about. One was that I got a tip from Young Giuseppe. Oh,
all that said, I'm probably going to fucking cave and get HeroQuest.
You're probably going to what?
I'm probably going to cave and get HeroQuest.
Are you really? Wow.
No, I don't think so.
I was going to say, I will buy a Redux version of Warhammer Quest.
That would get me immediately. Like, yeah. I would, as long as it,
I don't mind Silver Tower. But I'd rather have it like look like the older, like a redone version of the older one. They can update the minis. I would prefer that they didn't. But if they did, if Games Workshop did a full re-release of Warhammer Quest, and at least made the minis look somewhat like the older minis, I would 100% back it. I would buy it right there, right then and there.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Okay.
Because thus far, all of the returns of Warhammer Quest have been subpar. There was the Fantasy Flight one, which sounded exciting when everyone was like, oh, they're bringing it back, cool. And then it was a fucking shitty card game. Sucked.
Yep.
And then there was the Age of Sigmar ones, which are admittedly okay games, but they're definitely not Warhammer Quest.
Yeah, they're very much so. They're similar enough, but it doesn't have the feel.
Yeah, they're real okay, but you know what pisses me off? What really pisses me off, and one thing that I'm super excited about that HeroQuest didn't do, the Redux, is there was that push away from just using fucking boards. Like, everything's got to have weird-shaped dungeon tiles.
Yeah.
Instead of just using a fucking board. Like, the board has been solved. Do not fix what is not broken. So now when you look at Games of Warhammer Quest, it doesn't fit on a fucking table because you're trying to build this dungeon of like weird ass dick shapes, and suddenly like you've got a dick going off the right of your table, dick going off the left of your table, and you're like, I can't even build the dungeon. There's too many dicks.
It's too many dicks. You know, and I know it's a little
Fartman like, the Battle Lord, gonna no have dick. A board. Gotta yeah, have a board.
Blackstone Fortress is kind of like that, but it's all pre-built. Like, you go when you're playing a Blackstone Fortress mission, it shows you how to build the board for the Blackstone Fortress mission. I like Blackstone Fortress. I think it was a solid game. The mechanics were good. I think it played very well. It's a good group game. I'm kind of sad to see it ended, and I'm happy that means that they're gonna go move on to something else.
Yeah, I mean, they'll probably just do another one.
Like, yeah, exactly, like a different season of it. Okay. So let's keep moving. We got a Steam Forged, who we reported a couple weeks ago, was like, okay, we're done with Guild Ball. Guild Ball's dead.
Yes.
You know, release their Kickstarter, which is God Tier.
God Tear.
It's Tear, T-E-A-R.
Well, that's also how you spell the word tear. That's tear and tear.
No, I disagree. It's tear, God tear. The gods are crying, Steve. The gods are crying.
Right. No, that's fair. I guess it could also be God tear, but I'm just saying that the word tear and the word tear are spelled the same way.
I know they're homonyms. I know that.
I think it's tear. I think you're tearing up the gods.
No, I think it's god tears, and the gods are crying. This is like some anime level shit, man.
We need someone from Steamforge to tell us if it's tear as in the gods are crying, or tear as in you're tearing up the gods.
And I won't support anything unless I hear it from the CEO of Steamforged himself. I don't want no lonely peon. I want to hear from John Steamforge.
I would settle
the creator of Steamforged games.
I would settle for a rules writer or a game writer. Or actually the lore writer, I would actually say.
No, those people, they don't matter.
The lore writer is number one. He's the one who came up with the name. I want to hear whoever came up with the name, because whoever came up with the name had an intention. So I want to know
it's got to be the CEO, because the CEO would be like, oh, it's not pronounced that way. And then it's like, you have to kind of go along with him because he's the boss.
No, the CEO would be like, what are you talking about? You're talking to me about a game? Fuck, I'm looking at these goddamn sales numbers. Get the fuck out of my office. that's what the CEO would say.
And young Giuseppe bought into it, and he bought the ones that were in the store. He didn't do the Kickstarter, and he was glowing about, he gave a glowing review of the game. So I just, I wanted to throw that out there, that if you are looking for kind of a replacement for Guild Ball, I'm sure you probably, if you played Guild Ball at that point, you probably have already heard about this, but it seems like an interesting game, very Guild Ball-esque, very much like Warhammer Underworlds.
Yeah, I'd say it's also a swift replacement for Underworlds, because it's a game where you don't need to buy all the warbands.
Yes, you only need to buy like two or three, because you can combine warbands. Like you could have two warbands playing against two warbands, and you kind of build it up from there.
Yep, yeah, if you buy another warband, you'll actually be able to use the warband, not just the cards from it.
Yes, and that's, I think, yeah. It's got a little bit of that, so it is a good replacement for the, if you like the Underworld style of play, but you weren't necessarily excited about having to drop, what do we say, like $200 a year?
I think we determined it was $280 a year for,
yeah, something like that, yeah,
to maintain, because we're talking like you need to stay competitive, because you need everything, because if you don't have everything, you will lose. Like,
and by the way, $280 to maintain competitiveness inside any game is actually not that bad.
It's like, The problem is like it's like an upkeep fee, like you have to, like,
oh,
there's,
yeah,
no, there's no choice, because like with like sometimes with like Magic or like other games, you can get on a streak where you don't spend anything for a long time. Like I think the, like if you buy like a top, like right now this is a post rotation, so like because a new Magic set came out, so a bunch of sets rotated out. If you buy the best deck right now, like just buy it flat out, outside of something catastrophic happening, being like a ban or something like that, that deck will probably still be good for, you know, months, if not super long, depending. Yeah. And that also depends on like how the deck is now fragile. Cause there's been decks that have been dominant, or at least like not necessarily the best, but like in the top tier for, you know, 2 years, which like for a Magic deck, that's $500. Like, so like, it's about the same, but you know, I feel that like with my main gripe with Jadespire, as far as like staying competitive, is absolutely like it's very wasteful, because like, yeah, I bought you know six warbands, I'm literally only using one. Like, it's just a bunch of models I'm never going to use.
I think you said something about it earlier. I still love it. I still collect it. I think it's kind of nice because I'm a guy who has a ton of stuff, but yet I still love to buy. You know, I have that weird, horrible capitalism itis.
You have the itis.
Yeah, but it's nice just to be able to buy like a small set, and if I feel like painting them, I can paint them. Otherwise, I have the cards, I have the full set. You know, I'm not gonna cry too much about it. I think the figures are all great. So, and I've come to the conclusion that sometimes I just like building stuff. I don't necessarily want to paint it and put it on display. I just like building, which I know is weird to some people, but maybe not some people. Like, I think everybody. There's a good chunk of the hobby where people just enjoy building the stuff, not necessarily painting and playing with it. They just enjoy the model building aspect.
Yeah, it depends. For me, it depends on how many boxes I have to go through.
That's true too.
Like, so me, like, it's like when I look at it and I'm like, oh shit, there's 10 boxes of shit I have to build. I'm like, oh god.
So it's like when I give you this box full of 80 Marauders that are all one piece, you're gonna be like, oh thank god.
Yes, absolutely.
You'll have to fix the axes. Some of the axes, not all of them. Like maybe a quarter of them, but they're all essentially one piece.
All right. Well, then we're good.
Yeah, and you're like, and the nice thing is too is like, oh, the horn broke off the top of his head. Well, I'm just cutting these horns off because it's resin.
Yep. Yeah. It's like, who cares?
Well, and speaking of, I should mention this before we end.
I was saying one other quick note about Steamforge. They also are going pretty ham into their epic encounters, fantasy like D&D encounter boxes.
Yeah, I saw that.
There's four now. There's the Lair of the Red Dragon.
This is getting out of hand. There's four of them.
There's four of them. The Shrine of the Kobold Queen, the Lair of the Red Dragon, the Hall of the Orc King, and the Caverns of the Frost Giant. What I really like about these the most is that they're basically like a mini adventure. Like, you know, you want to make an encounter that's an adventure. You've got it, like, right there. Because the giant, you know, is a huge challenge for most parties. Then dragon, huge challenge for most parties. And then also, they're actually compatible with each other. Like, so they're releasing them in twos. So one is a, like, basically, like, I guess it's not a regiment, but to, you know, make sense, a regiment, and then a large model. But if you take the Kobold Queen set, there's tokens that come with the dragon for kobolds, because, you know, kobolds usually work for dragons. So if you have both the Kobold Queen set and the dragon set, they actually stick together. So you actually can use the kobold, like the Kobold Queen is its own encounter, and then you can also use the extra kobolds with the dragon. And then the giant is the same way with the orcs.
Yeah, which is nice. That's it's a little on the expensive side, but I think it's really nice.
Yeah, they're really, you get a lot of figures. Like,
you do. I mean, it's for like the giant. It's $40 for the giant, and you know, you get the game mat, which is nice. I'll say that. So if you use that for your actual combat, that's nice. It's just it's a little expensive.
He is really fucking big. That's the other thing too. Like, he's not actually like like the normal scale of a giant in D&D. That's a huge model. So yeah, is the dragon. They're very, very big.
The dragon is like something like almost like a foot in length. Yeah. But that's the wingspan, you know.
But I mean, still, it's huge. Like, it's just the volume of that model is mighty.
Yeah.
I think they're fairly priced.
They are fairly priced. I mean,
they also come with an adventure too. They come with a fifth edition adventure. So like, you actually have like a built in little like campaign thing. So
I prefer Steamforge's animal adventures more than anything else. So
was it the dog adventures and stuff?
Dungeons and Doggies.
Yeah, Dungeons and Doggos, and there's the catacombs and cats, I think.
Yeah, the catacombs and cats. I don't like that the beagle is a because that's my dog. I think, let's see. I think the beagle is a is it a ranger? I'm not 100% sure. I don't think he's. But whatever. I wasn't super impressed with the beagle sculpt. That's the dog I have. I have a beagle.
I see.
So yeah, the one last thing before we end. We kind of talked about this a little bit, and I just wanted to give an update. So I had talked about how I'm getting the new Elegoo Saturn 3D printer. It's going to be shipped. It's very close to being shipped. But I wanted to give an update is because today it was noted that now you can actually buy the same model I have, the Elegoo Mars, for under $200. It's at $190 right now on Amazon. And that's the older base model. They did do a pro version, which is a little more expensive. It's a little nicer. But like, I've been using this Elegoo Mars now for about a year and a half. And it's the most idiot-proof machine I've ever dealt with in my life. Like, I've never dealt with a hobby technology where it was literally just like, put in resin, push button, get minis, you know? So,
right.
Yeah. So that's, you know, that's pretty cheap right now. So if you were looking to get into 3D printing, like, that's a really solid buy for, if you just want to test it out for under $200, like, yeah, why not? I wanted to give a shout out to Titan Forge, because we talked about that them with their 3D printing thing before, but their models for this month, or for August, they released some of the pirate ogres that they had done for their Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. Now, for their Kickstarter, they had released the models. They didn't do, this wasn't like a 3D printer file Kickstarter.
Are you talking about the 3D printed game? The game where
everyone... No. This is different. They did a Kickstarter for, remember when they sent us the models to kind of try out like the pirate ogres?
Oh yeah, I love them. They're fantastic. I still think I'm going to end up doing a pirate ogre. they're so good. Honestly, straight up real talk, the only thing that's really stopping me from like just going ham into that pirate ogre army is the fucking the on foot ogre half of that army book fucking sucks. They're terrible. The ones that the Beast Claw Raiders are really good. The Beast Claw Raiders are tournament competitive. It's like it's so funny because like the two halves of that army are like Beast Claw Raiders, tournament competitive, Iron Guts, fucking garbage, like actually terrible. It's a very frustrating divide.
Well, in their last Patreon for the ogres, they have the guy riding the crab, the captain riding the crab, the one that they sent me.
Yes, very cool.
And so you could use that guy as a whatever the big the stone horn.
Oh, that's true. You know what? Maybe I'll actually take a look because maybe I can create a competitive Beast Claw Raiders army using the available pirate order.
And they have and they also released Komodo Dragon Riders, and those could be the whatever the smaller mounts are.
Yeah, I can't remember what the fuck those things are called.
Yeah.
There's actually the Gator Riders too, so I could probably...
Yeah, well, the Gator Rider, like, so I'm just saying, like, in terms of 3D printing, though, I have the files for the Komodo Dragon Riders. If you wanted to buy
the actual
models, you can get the Gator Riders.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and they also... And one of the figures that they have not released the files for yet is a giant crab that has, like, a harpoon launcher on the back, so...
Oh, that's the bad one, so we don't need to worry about that. Okay. I mean, the model, I'm sure the model is dope, but that like, cause the Stonehorn is super, super strong. And, the one with, where it's the two guys riding on the thing with the big tusks, the stone tusk or whatever.
Yeah.
That one's bad. Okay. Stonehorn versions, super, super good. Other one, terrible. That's the ogre book. Like, it's so funny. Cause I was looking at it and I was listening to this one dude who's like, he's like arguably like the, like he's one of the better ogre players for Age of Sigmar. That exists. At least in North America. And like, it's so funny because like, when I evaluated the book, it's like either this seems like everything in this book seems like it's either like amazing or trash. There's like, there's nothing that's in like, it's okay or like, it's usable. Like, there's nothing in the middle ground for that entire army book. It's either like, holy shit, this is a very strong model, or it's actually booty sauce.
I was
apparently right, because like he did a review and he's like the way he was describing each unit, I'm like, oh, okay, so that's just the way it is.
I was so they had a bunch of, there was also a bunch of the ogres that were released for Bloodfields, which was their 3D printed game.
Yes.
But they were, most of them, I believe, I'm not 100% sure, were from that Kickstarter. They were just the 3D files from your first Kickstarter, just put it into the game for the 3D printing. They were like an add-on.
So
with their last Patreon, you could totally like, you could make a good chunk of that ogre army based just off of that. And they're really good about putting their stuff out, so that I'm sure in the near future, there'll be like an Ogre Wave 2 part of their Patreon where you'll be able to get a lot of the other stuff as well. But they're one that's fan fucking tastic. And I just wanted to say that, I got a commission to print some of their stuff, because that's actually a lot of times people will subscribe to the Patreons and then just shoot me the files and have me print the models for them, which I think is totally fair, because they just don't have a printer, so they're like, so they just give me that and, you know, I charge them whatever and they let me keep the files. So I print off I printed off some of the ogres. They came out so unbelievably nice.
Oh yeah, you were mentioning that, and I was saying that like, I figured they would be, you know, really good with that simply because they're designing them to be 3D printed.
Well, some of the problems when you're 3D printing is you have to, you know, peel off the supports because, you know, you have to support certain pieces that are being printed, and you know that could leave like these little tiny, and you'll see it when I give you the Marauders, they'll leave these little tiny nubs that you just kind of got to file off with like sanding stick. You just like shave it off real quick. It takes 2 seconds, whatever. Not a big deal.
Also, those Komodo Dragon Riders are fucking incredible. I I'm gonna look into actually seeing what models would be needed for a top tier Beast Claw Raiders army, because if I can do them using those Komodo things and the Crab Riders, well, I mean, it's gonna happen. I'm just saying, like I love the Crab Rider. I think it's amazing. I mean, their sculpts are all incredible. So, it's funny because these are the ones I remember. They sent the Conquistadori, super cool, and I have the one dude who's wearing the shark.
Yeah,
that guy's dope as shit too. So. I'm looking forward to it. I'll take a look, because if I can build a competitive list out of this.
And I'll just throw this out there. Some of the other Patreons that I really, really like for 3D printing, if you're into fantasy, there's been a real resurgence of people doing square-based armies, but in like, they're selling this, the files for it. So like, if you want a Bretonian army, I know right now two Patreons, Highland Miniatures and Raven Twin, are both doing like Bretonian reduxes, and they're really, really fucking nice.
There's the one dude who does the Tomb Kings too, right?
Yeah. And I was gonna say Lost Kingdom.
That's the one.
Lost Kingdom has done Chaos Dwarves, they've done Lizardmen, and they've done Tomb Kings. So they all three of them are gorgeous. The Tomb Kings one, they've done only two waves of it. They've done chariots, they've done horse, cavalry, and they've done some Upshapti. But they have the new one that they're doing for October has the mammoth, and they have like a weird like Egyptian boat / sarcophagus. It's just really cool looking. I would check it out. That one is Lost Kingdom. But they also in their first wave of their Patreon they had an undead camel, which Steve really liked.
Yes, I really like the undead. I really like the undead camel. I thought he was very cool.
Raven Twin also did a Lizardman army, which is fairly good as well. But yeah, so like right now, if you subscribe to those three, that's $30 a month, which is not terrible in the long haul. But you at this point, maybe for I don't know, $120 worth of Patreon subscriptions would have file access to three full fantasy armies. And I know there's a couple out there right now that are doing some Empire proxy stuff, which is nice. I mean, I don't need any of this. I just know that these models exist and I've printed some of them. I have not seen any really good Orc and Goblin proxy stuff though. So just to throw that out there, definitely keep an eye on them. Titan Forge, all of their stuff is gorgeous. They do, my only complaint in Titan Forge, I'm sorry if you're listening to this, their models scale a little on the big side. So
I personally like that.
I do too for like certain things, but I know that just some of the stuff is really huge. So anything you're doing with true line of sight, you kind of got to keep an eye on that. Cause you don't want your shit to be too big. One of the things I absolutely adore that they've done, and I printed it out, is they did the Ogre Hunter for this is Captain Ahab, and he's got like a huge fucking squid arm over his shoulder.
Oh, and the whales or the walruses? Yeah,
the walruses are his Mournfangs or whatever those are called. Yes,
very, very cool.
So cool. So very cool. But yeah, I wanted to talk about that because if anybody listening wants to get into 3D printing, that model is available right now for sub $200. So like to get started with it, you'd have to buy that for $190. You'd have to buy a UV light from Amazon, which 405 nanometer UV light, which I think usually runs for like $25 to $30. And you'll have to buy, a tub of resin that's like $30. So you add $60 on that. So for $250, you could start printing all of that stuff right there. You will probably need either isopropyl alcohol. You will need isopropyl alcohol to clean your model when it's done. And that's kind of hard to find right now. But if you look online, there's alternatives. You just have to pick which one you want. Mm. But so anyway, any other things that we want to talk about that I missed? Did you want to talk about the fact that they're going to be releasing Sons of Behemoth soon?
Yeah, I mean it's they look fucking hilariously oversized.
Yeah, and those are gonna sell for like $250.
You think so? Is that revealed?
No, but they just I think Techless is like 170. And I was like shocked at that pricing. I shouldn't be shocked, but I was shocked.
Well,
I was like,
I mean, for again, I will throw out there, like, yes, the prices are high, but again, you know, A, it's a luxury item. Like,
yeah,
it's not something you need. But B, one of the things that I hate to like be like a Games Workshop stan here, but one of the things I have noticed, at least it appears to me, is that unlike when they would release a giant figure with a ludicrous price tag, in years past, it would be like, this is the new giant figure, ludicrous price tag, you need three. Like, yeah. That was how it used to be. It doesn't seem to be that way anymore. It seems very much like you can, like, the Great and Clean one is actually a great example. I think the Great and Clean is 130.
Yeah, he's not that expensive.
I mean, 130 really for us. So, yeah, that's, yeah. That, or no, 170, 170.
Yeah.
So like, oh no, I'm sorry. I was wrong on both counts. It's 140. The Great and Clean one is $140 for that kit. So like, yes, that's expensive. That's very expensive for a single figure. But, you know, if this were Games Workshop of yesteryear, you absolutely would have no choice but to buy three because it's the only, it's just the way it was.
No, you're right.
The only competitive list would have been three Grin and Clean ones.
Yeah, I honestly think with the Giants, the Behemoth, you'll probably need one of the big guys and you'll probably have two to three of the smaller guys. Oh, you probably have three of the smaller Giants, which are about $60 a piece. So.
Yeah, my guess is that the tournament list for Sons of Behemoth will end up being two Giants and then like two smaller Giants. It's all going to be depending on what rules they give them to compensate for model count.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing. Because the only reason, like I was saying, how about specifically fucking Beast Claw Raiders, the reason Beast Claw Raiders were a meme army for an extremely long period of time was you could bring an army that could table someone and you would lose the game every time. because you only had five models, so like you would just lose because they're like, I brought 30 models. Like, my army's also super tiny, but I brought 30 models, so I'm going to absolutely destroy your five model army. But the biggest rules change they gave them in the new edition was they made their basic troops count as two, and then a bunch their bigger figures, I think their monsters count as 10, and I think their monsters, like a certain monster counts as 20, or you can give one of your characters an ability that makes them count as 20. So that's a huge factor that makes them not just lose every single game of Age of Sigmar. So depending on whatever that rule is for the Sons of Behemoth, will determine whether or not you're using one giant or two. I'm just going to call them giants. One giant or two giants. That's really going to be. And also,
no,
it seemed like there were characters. I don't think they've spoiled the scrolls yet, but the way I was reading the background, I saw one of the articles on the Warhammer community. It seems like like each one is a special character.
No, yeah, I think all of the Mega Gargants are like special type Mega Gargants, but we'll see. You know, you never know. We'll talk more about that when they drop the actual like previews and lists and stuff like that. We'll be able to see.
I think it's very cool. Although I will say I have one minor complaint about it, and this is just kind of like a thing. It's yet another destruction faction that is going to be able to be easily allied with armies that aren't destruction.
Yeah.
Which just kind of irks me because I feel that order, chaos, and death all have a very unique feel, a very unique flavor, and they have many unique armies within their factions. Destruction has not only the lowest by a fucking mile amount of armies inside its Grand Alliance, everything in their armies are like, you know, mercenary. Like, you want, oh, you like ogres? Well, there's this mercenary band of ogres you can take in your fucking, you know.
I think they got like, aside from like the generics, they have like five, right? You have ogres. You have the two ogres. You have two orcs.
By army books, they have one goblin book, they have one orc book, and they have one ogre book.
No, they have two orc books. Well, no, they're combined together now.
Yeah, it's just one book. So yes, there are sub armies in there, but we can't count that because if we broke that down, we'd have to talk about all of the other armies that are a bunch of sub armies. Because then Maggotkin would count as two, and Slaanesh would count as two. You know, all of the army books come with multiple.
I think Slaanesh is actually three, but that's.
Maybe.
All right. So go to Game Classy Facebook page. Best way you can get in contact with us. You could like, comment, subscribe on the iTunes. You can also like, comment, subscribe on the YouTubes. You could follow me on Instagram. I am Game Classy Joe. That's where you can see all my painted models. I'm on $3.99 right now for posts. I have to make something really impressive for my 400th post. It'll probably be a picture of my anus. And you could follow Steve on Twitter at I am Commandster. Oh no, Twitter. He's off Twitter. That's right. He quit Twitter. He's on Reddit. If you track him down on Reddit, he's not going to give him his Reddit profile, but if you want to track him down, I actually deleted Reddit. I'm tired of Reddit.
Oh yeah, nice. I'm cool with my very curated feed. I'm happy with that. I also shut, like, one of the nice things I shut off, the, like, it doesn't recommend me things anymore, because it always recommends, like, it recommends what's active, and generally what's active is horrible. So
yeah.
So I just disabled that feature, and it made my feed a lot nicer.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so Steve, until next time.
hang on, let me think. just the other month, I was playing in the local international poker tournament, and when it came time to reveal my hand, bam, heroic brew, and I took home all of the winnings, because after all, who's going to argue?
You and your heroic brew. Bye.
Bye.
Game Classy.